Masechet Baba Kama Daf Ayin Bet. The Mishnah had a case Hashochet v'nimset terefa, if a thief steals an ox and then does shechita. But it turns out when you analyze the lungs and inside, it's a terefa animal was not going to live out it's a year, and therefore it's not kosher. Nevertheless, he has to pay 4 and 5 because this is Tanakama that does not agree with Rabbi Shimon. Tanakama thinks that if you do shechita in the proper way, even if the meat is not and does not end up being kosher, it's still called shechita, and therefore this guy, he stole and did shechita, he has to pay 4 and 5. It's irrelevant the fact that the food, the meat, is not kosher afterwards. Similarly, the second case mentioned in the Mishnah is the thief stole an animal and then brought it into the Beit HaMikdash courtyard. It's cholin. It's a non-sacred animal. You're not allowed to do shechita on a non-sacred animal in the temple courtyard, but he goes and does that. That goes against a biblical prohibition, and the animal is prohibited to have benefit from it. Asur behana'a. And even though the animal, therefore, is not edible, is not kosher, nevertheless, according to Tanakama, it is called shechita, and therefore, he has to pay 4 and 5 for stealing it and slaughtering it. That was the Mishnah. Amar le Rav Habibi Mehozna'a le Rav Asher. Rav Habibi, that comes from the town of Mehoza, said to Rav Asher, Shema mina ena l'shchita ela l'basof. Di yeshna l'shchita metechila ve'ad sof. Kevan d'shchat be'ba purta asara. Idach la demare katabach. There's two opinions about how shechita works. When does shechita legally take effect? And there's two opinions. One says, and this is the one that he is arguing for, that shechita takes effect at the end. You could think of this by analogy, let's say like a seatbelt buckle. Seatbelt buckle, if you put it halfway in, it's not secure. It'll fall right out. It's like not putting it on the seatbelt at all. Only when you push it all the way in and it clicks, then the seatbelt is called on. So too here regarding shechita. When do we call this an act of shechita? So that, let's say, if you're doing shechita improperly, chulin in the Beit HaMikdash, when do you violate that sin? Well, it's only when you finish the shechita. The knife goes right down and completes the act, severs the two pipes. That's when the prohibition kicks in. But just at the beginning of it, let's say you would cut just a little bit and stop, then the violation would not have been done. So this is Ela Lebasof. There is another opinion that says shechita is a continuous process that starts from the beginning, goes to end. This would be more like opening a faucet. You open a little water comes out. Open it more water comes out. But the beginning of the process is at the very start is already a violation. Like if the plumber says, don't turn on the water, you turn on a little bit, you still turned on the water, you didn't do what he said. And according to this, what triggers the violation is the very beginning of shechita. If you take a chulin animal into the Beit HaMikdash, as a moment you do the first nick of the skin on the neck of the animal, you are liable already. Those are the two opinions. So he tells Rav Asher that we can see from our Mishnah that it must be that the shechita is triggered at the end. Why? Because if you say shechita is triggered at the beginning, and we're going to call that just at the beginning, right? It's continuous, but the point is that it's triggered at the beginning. Then once the thief starts the shechita a little bit in the Beit HaMikdash, and it's an chulin animal, he already violated the prohibition of doing shechita in the Beit HaMikdash of a chulin animal, and therefore it already becomes prohibited behana'a. Once it's prohibited to have benefit from it, it has no value, can't be sold, and therefore it has no value, it has no owner, and therefore when he continues and does the full shechita, he is killing an animal that does not belong to its owner, la demareka tabach. And a thief only has to pay 4 and 5 if he both steals it and does shechita while it's owned by the original owner from whom he stole it, right? If he does something to that causes it to change ownership or be ownerless in this case, then he is not liable to 4 and 5. And so therefore, it must be that the prohibition of shechita regarding doing shechita in the Beit HaMikdash is only triggered at the end of the shechita process, which is the same time. So then, during the whole shechita, it belongs to the original owner because he didn't violate the shechita, the improper shechita yet. Only when he completes it, then the prohibition is triggered. But that by then, he already did shechita and already is liable to 4 and 5 to the owner who did own it the whole time during the process of shechita until the end. All right, that's Rav Chavivi's proof. Amar le Ravuna b'red Rava, ki kamehayev ahu purta. Ravuna's b'red Rava says, I have an answer to that. It could be that the thief is liable to pay 4 and 5 at the first bit of the slaughter, right? If you say that it's a continual process, so just like you violate doing shechita in the Beit HaMikdash at the beginning of the process, so too, as long as he begins the process, the thief already has to pay 4 and 5, and therefore they are triggered at the same time. And so it doesn't matter that through the rest of the process, it now is ownerless. At the beginning of the process, it was owned by the original owner, and that's enough to make him pay 4 and 5. Amar le Rav Asher, however, Rav Asher answers to that, La titche, no, do not push away, do not reject Rav Chavivi's Mechoz Na'az claim based on that. This is not a good answer because Utvacho Kulo Ba'inan Veleka. The Pasuk says, if a thief steals the ox, Utvacho, and slaughters it. And that word means it does the entire slaughter. So since there's an explicit Pasuk regarding that, and so that for sure, to pay 4 and 5, you have to do the whole act of slaughter, and it has to be owned by the original owner the whole time. And here, we don't have that, right? If you say that the prohibition of the shechita in the Beit HaMikdash is triggered right at the beginning, then the rest of the process, it has no owner. And so therefore, he would not have to pay 4 and 5. And so don't reject Rav Chavivi. In fact, it must be that shechita only happens at the end. Don't say both are triggered at the beginning, but rather both are triggered at the end. Ela kashya. Okay, fine. So, but if we don't reject Rav Chavivi, then we have a challenge, right? According to the one who says that the slaughter happens at the very beginning, that the prohibition is then why would you have to pay 4 and 5, right? We don't want to say that this is, we restrict ourselves to only one opinion. What about the other opinion? So Rav Gamda, the name of Rava, is a brilliant answer. The thief stole this ox. He brought it near the Beit HaMikdash, right? Outside the Beit HaMikdash, he started slaughtering it, right? And he did already part of the organs, that the pipes that have to be slaughtered. He did that outside the Beit HaMikdash, and where you're allowed to do slaughter. And then he carried the animal in to the temple courtyard and completed it in the temple courtyard. Now this is not so easy to do because shechita, there's all kinds of timings. You can't just sit and wait in the middle of shechita, but somehow you have a conveyor belt and you can move it and you do it that way. In that case, so it's only the last bit of the shechita process that is done in the Beit HaMikdash courtyard. And so therefore, almost all the 95% of the process is done outside, and therefore the owner still owns it. And so that's going to bring liability to pay 4 and 5. And only at the very end, it's in the Beit HaMikdash, and only at that point will he violate the biblical law and it becomes asur b'hana'ah. But already, since it was, most of the shechita was done outside, he has to pay the 4 and 5, and that's how that other opinion that says that the shechita is triggered at the beginning, but that it wasn't prohibited yet because it was outside of the Beit HaMikdash. So there was no prohibition until the very end when he brought it in. And that's how we can solve the problem and explain the Mishnah according to everyone. All right, all that is one version of this conversation. There is another similar version. Some say that Rav Chavivi's statement that Rav Asher was not about the Mishnah directly, Shema Minah based on the Mishnah, but rather it was a comment on the following Machloket about this very same topic. So it's not much of a difference between these two versions, but anyway, this is the second version. Amar Rabbi Shimon Mishum de Rabbi Levi Saba. This is Rabbi Shimon is Resh Lakish, said the name of Rabbi Levi, the elder. And now the Shechita El Al Basof. So Resh Lakish says that shechita, prohibited shechita, is triggered at the end, only at the end, like the buckle of the seatbelt. Rabbi Yochanan says it's a gradual process, like a faucet, and therefore it's the very beginning of it already makes it is a prohibition, and if it was a non-sacrificial animal, the Beit HaMikdash, it will be prohibited by Hana'a immediately when the knife nicks the skin. Amar le Rav Chavivi mechozna al Rav Asher lema kasavar Rabbi Yochanan holin shenischatu ba'azara lav deoraita. So Rav Chavivi says about this, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that says that the prohibition starts at the very beginning, it must be that Rabbi Yochanan thinks that holin, a non-sacrificial official animal that is slaughtered in the Beit HaMikdash courtyard, it must be, it's not deoraita. The prohibition of doing that shechita is for sure deoraita. That's in the Torah. What it means is that the prohibition of receiving benefit from the carcass of the animal must be not deoraita. It's only drabanan. We don't want you to benefit from it. From a deoraita point of view, You can buy it and sell it. Therefore, it is still owned, has value, and therefore still owned by the owner, right? And then that would work, because even though the prohibition is triggered at the very beginning of the nick, still it's owned by the owner, and therefore this thief killing this animal in the Beit HaMikdash courtyard, he slaughters the whole thing. It's owned by the owner, so he violated stealing and slaughtering. That's why he's liable to 4 and 5. Because if you think that the prohibition of receiving benefit from such an animal that's slaughtered Beit HaMikdash is deoraita, then once he starts and does a nick in the and a neck of the animal, it already becomes ownerless. It can't be no benefit, can't be owned, can't be sold, and therefore since it's already prohibited from Hana'a and has no so he's doing shechita on something that is not owned by the original owner, and then wouldn't not have to pay 4 and 5. So it seems that we have to say, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that there's no deoraita prohibition of Hana'a, which is difficult to say. So Amar le Rav Acha b'Red Rava ki ka mechayev na mehahu ahahu purta. So Rav Acha, the son of Rava, says, I have an answer. Maybe one is liable to pay for a thief is liable to pay 4 and 5 even when he just begins the shechita, right? When the Torah says if you steal it and slaughter it, even the beginning of slaughter, that's going to make you pay 4 and 5 even if you didn't finish the rest of it. And the beginning of slaughter, it did belong to the owner. Amar le Rav Asher la tidche utbacho kulo ba'inan veleka. Rav Asher says, no, don't reject Rav Chavivi based on this, because it's not true. The Torah says you pay 4 and 5 when the thief does tibicha, meaning the whole thing, he only have paid 4 and 5 at the end of the process. And here, there is no tibicha to the end of the process. He does slaughter it all the way, but it's not owned by the owner at that time. And therefore, he would not have to pay. So this is a challenge. So Ela Kashya, indeed, this is going to be a challenge to Rabbi Yochanan, assuming that we don't want to say that Rabbi Yochanan thinks that there's no biblical prohibition of receiving benefit from it. We don't know how he would explain this case. Rav Gamda said in the name of Rava that, you know where you one would be liable, the thief, when he does the shechita in the Beit HaMikdash? It would be in the following case where he starts off doing the shechita outside the Beit HaMikdash, and so that whole time it belongs to the original owner, right? And he already started cutting the pipes of the animal outside, and then carried it in and finished the shechita inside. So since the majority of the shechita was in fact done outside the Beit HaMikdash, while it was owned by the original owner, he has to pay 4 and 5, and then he brings it in. So now, at the end, it becomes, he violates the law, and it becomes prohibited b'hana'ah. And so, it doesn't matter. He still has to pay 4 and 5, because it was owned by the original owner, and it doesn't matter that the meat's not kosher, the shechita is still called shechita. All right, next Mishnah. Ganav al pi shenayim v'tavach u'machar al pihen v'nimsu zomimin meshalimin hakol. A thief steals, and there's two witnesses that come and say, this guy stole. And then he slaughtered or sold it, and the same two witnesses, they're following around, and they say, oh, we saw him steal it, and they testify also that they saw him slaughter it. But then it turns out a few days later that these edim are conspiring witnesses. They could not have been there and seen this thief steal it and slaughter it in New York, because the thieves, the next set of witnesses come and say, these witnesses were with us in Chicago the entire week. And so it's impossible that they could have witnessed this crime. So the law of edim zoamin is that they have to pay what they would have obligated the defendant to pay had their testimony held up. And so if their testimony went ahead, then they would have made the thief pay 4 and 5. So therefore, they have to pay the 4 or 5, depending on if it's a sheep or an ox. That's case number one. Ganav al pi shenayim v'tabachu machad al pi shenayim acherim. In this case, there's two sets of witnesses. One set of witnesses see the witness to the theft of the ox. A second set of witnesses say that they saw the thief slaughter it. Elu ve'elu nimsu zomimin, and both of them, turns out, they're all zomimin. All four witnesses were not in New York and couldn't have seen not the theft, and the other witnesses could not have seen the slaughter. Harishonim meshalimim tashlome kefel, v'acharonim meshalimim tashlome shelosha. In this case, they split the payment, because the first two witnesses that said that they saw him steal it, if their testimony had been verified, they would have made him pay double, because he just stole, at that point, he just stole it, and so any thief has to pay back double. The second set of witnesses who said we saw him steal it, they were going to require him to pay 3 more, assuming that this was an ox. 2 more if it was a sheep. So let's just assume it was an ox. So they would have to make him pay 3 more times of the ox. So therefore, they have to pay 3. Good. So that all makes sense. Very logical. But it's interesting chidush that edim ed zomem, the second set, even though the thief has to pay 5. But the second set would make him pay 3 more than he already had to pay. So the two sets of witnesses split the amounts. Nimsu acharonim zomimin, hu mishalem tashlume kefel, ven mishalemin tashlume shelosha. Same case as before, that one set of witnesses see him steal. Those witnesses are verified. All right, they're never found to be false, and they're true witnesses. He really did steal it. And then a second set of witnesses said, we saw him slaughter it, but the second set are found to be edim zomimin. In that case, since the first witnesses are true, the thief has to pay double. He stole it. But the second set of witnesses, they would have made him pay 3 more, but since they're edim zomimin, they have to pay 3. So here the chidush is that you can split the payment between the thief himself and edim zomimin. Achad min acharonim zomimin batla edut sheniya. Achad min arishonim zomimin batla kol edut shim en geneba en tibicha ve en mechira. This case starts off the same as the ones before, that you have two sets of witnesses. One set of witnesses saw the thief steal. A second set of witnesses saw the thief slaughter. But now, only one witness is found to be an ed zomim, right? Either of the second pair or of the first pair. The general law is that when you have only one of a pair that's found to be an ed zomim, he does not pay as edim zomim. Edim zomim only pay what they would have caused the defendant to pay when they're both found edim zomim. If only one is found zomim and the other one stays, so then we throw out the whole testimony, of course, because one witness is not sufficient, but they don't get a punishment that they would have to pay anything for what they would have made the defendant pay. So, in such a case, if only one of the second pair that saw him slaughter, is found to be Zomamin, then we throw out the second testimony. And in that case, the thief would just have to pay double, you know, because the first set of witnesses is still good. But the other way around, if one of the first set of witnesses is found to be a Zomem, then the whole case is thrown out. Because if you throw out the first set of witnesses about stealing it, so then if he never stole it, or at least there's no proof that he ever stole it, then the fact that he slaughtered it or sold it is not meaningful. So what? You're allowed to do shechita on an animal or sell an animal. From all we know, he owns the animal because there's no testimony that he stole it in the first place. Therefore, we throw out the whole case. All right, that's the Mishnah. Itmar. Ha'ed zomem abaye amar lemafreya ho nifsal. Rava amar mikan ulaba nifsal. Now is a general question about edim zomemin. We're going to bring in our Mishnah in part of the, as part of a challenge. But this would apply to any case of ed zomem. Abaye says that if edim are found to be zomemin, then they are disqualified from testifying, not only from the time that the edim zomim, that the edim mizimim, the witnesses that say you were with us in Chicago, not only from that time on, for sure they're no good to testify in the future, but even retroactively, they are anything that they would, let's say they testified about something in between, something else entirely, they'll turn out to be disqualified retroactively from the time that they made their false testimony to begin with. Whereas Rava says, no, if they made their testimony on Sunday and then they're found to be Edim Zomin on Thursday, then they're only disqualified from testifying from Thursday on, and anything in between is okay. Abaye Amar, what's the reasoning? Lemafreyahu nifsa, mehushata da'asid ha'vale rasha, v'atavra amra al tashet rasha ed. The Torah says that an evildoer is not allowed to be a witness. An evildoer is defined not just as someone that's, you know, like wicked all day, but anyone who violates a serious violation like stealing and gambling and so on is disqualified to be a witness. Testifying falsely is enough to make someone a rasha, and therefore disqualified from testifying after that until he makes teshuvah. So this person, he testified on Sunday, and that someone stole an ox, and then it turns out on Thursday witnesses come and say, oh, he was with us in Chicago. So now we know that he testified falsely on Sunday. Since Sunday he's a rasha, anything that he testified about on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is certainly going to be bad testimony. He was disqualified, and therefore we have to throw him out retroactively. Abaye makes perfect sense. Rava says, no, only from Thursday on he is disqualified, because the whole law of Edim Zomim is a new law, is itself not logical, only because the Torah said so. Because after all, it's two against two. Two witnesses came and gave testimony that, whatever, this guy stole an ox. Two witnesses say those witnesses weren't there. But the first set of witnesses say we were there and we saw it. So when you have two against two, so then we don't know which one is right. So why should you listen to the second two just because they came later rather than the first two? We should just leave it as a sefik. So, but that's not true. The Torah instead says, nope, you believe the second two, that those witnesses weren't there at that time in that place, and we punish the first two. That's a chidush that the Torah says is not necessarily logical. Therefore, since the Torah gave us this novel law, we only can apply it from the time that it happens and onward. We don't really know for sure that they had testified falsely to begin with, to say that retroactively we see that they are liars and untrustworthy. All we know, we don't know for sure, because it's two against two. All we know for sure is that, okay, there's a special Torah law decree from Thursday on, they are disqualified. Fine, we accept that, but it's not a logical necessity, and therefore we're not going to apply it retroactively. Very, very interesting claim. Okay, that is all one version of Rava's reasoning. But there's another way to explain Rava, why it should be from Thursday on and not retroactive. Ika damre, Rava na mika bayes virale, damar, le mafreya hu nifsal, v'hacha haynu ta'ameh de Rav, mishum peseda de lakohot. The following reason says, in fact, Rava agrees essentially with Abaye, that from the letter of the law, you're right, since on Thursday there were found to be false dim zomamin, false witnesses, that means they lied on Sunday, and therefore they are already improper disqualified witnesses from Sunday, and therefore, let's say on Monday they signed off on a purchase of land, right, and verified a document for the purchase of land, and then on Tuesday there were witnesses at a wedding, and then on Wednesday they went and they testified about some other case of someone owes something or other, and then on Thursday they found to be edim zomemin. So really, it would make sense what Abaye says, that they were the shaim from Sunday, and everything should be no good from then. However, Rava says, made a big claim. We care for the loss to purchasers, right? Because that means all the transactions that were done in between. On Monday, these very witnesses, they validated a sale. And so now the sale turns out would be invalid, right? And how about that wedding that happened on Tuesday? Oh, sorry, you're not married anymore, right? And so now you're going to have to undo everything. And maybe it's not necessarily 3 days later. It could be months later. And so now we have to go back and look up every case that they testified about in between, every business transaction that they testified on, and we're going to have to undo all of those. And this is not going to be good for the economy, for purchasers, right? Those are going to say, oh, I'm going to buy this land, and then the Edim are going to be Zohamin, like that other case and the other case, right? This might happen often. And so this is going to cause a loss to purchasers we don't want. So we want to protect them. Therefore, even though this is a very bold claim, even though from the letter of the law, they in fact are the Shaim from Sunday, nevertheless, we don't like the consequences of the disqualifying them retroactively. Too many hurts too many people. So you know what? We say, the rabbis say, no, we're going to only disqualify them from Thursday on, right? They can no longer come. But anything they did before, we're going to let it pass. All right, my benayhu, what's the difference between the two? What would be a practical difference of a case that the two reasons that Rava gave would have different outcomes? So we have two answers. Let's say on Thursday, two witnesses come and say that one of the original witnesses that testified on Sunday was with us in Chicago. And then two other witnesses say about the other original witness and say he was with us in Canada. So now it's two against one. So according to the original reasoning that you say, Edim Zomin is a chidush. Well, now it's not a chidush. You don't need to rely on a chidush. Two against one, two is always going to win. And so since only one witness said, I was there and I saw it, and two say, you weren't there, you were with us. And so the two is going to be believed. For sure he's out. And similarly, the other guy, he was with us in Canada, for sure he's out. Therefore, according to the first reasoning of Rava, Rava would have certainly agree in this case that this guy, the two witnesses are the Shaim, and they retroactively are disqualified from Sunday. But if you say the second reasoning, well, then we knew already that they are the Shaim. I accepted that. But we just can't accept the consequences. It's going to hurt the purchasers. It's going to be bad for the economy. So we just ignore the fact that they testified back on Sunday. And we say, listen, that might have been a problem. We're going to accept everything they did before in order to protect the economy. And only from now on, there'll be no good. So that'll be one case. Or, let's say they didn't, the second set of witnesses, they didn't make them edim zomin. They didn't say you were with us in Chicago. Instead, they said, we testify that these two witnesses had robbed a bank, right? On whatever, last week. And so therefore, they are no good because they're criminals. So they cannot testify. So now they're attacking not the testimony. So it's not two against two. It's not that the two original ones said, we saw this the thief steal an ox, and the other two said, no, you didn't see it because you're with us. Those are contradicting each other. So then you say, oh, that's a chidush. But if the second set of witnesses say that you guys are robbers because you robbed from a bank the week before, so they are undermining the witnesses themselves. In a case like that, Rava would agree that this goes back retroactively if you say it's the first one, because it's not two against two, it's two against these people who, and if they're the second set of witnesses are verified that the first ones robbed the bank, then that's it, they're the Shaim. And so we have to throw out anything that they did in between. But according to the second reason, then we would still apply the same thing. We don't want to have any, and that's not only a law in Edim Zoamin, any witnesses that turn out later to have been the Shaim for whatever reason, we're going to accept whatever they did until that point, because it will hurt the economy too much if we start throwing out witnesses retroactively. Okay, so now we just explained what we just said. Lachli shana damat mishum chidush leka. If you say this is a chidush that the Torah says that you should believe two against two, and so that's what we do from here on, but in these two cases that does not apply. Lachli shana damat mishum pesedal kachot ika. But if you say the reason is that we want to protect buyers, well then that always applies, right? Because it really makes no difference what the reality is. We know they're the Shaim, but we still, protecting buyers is more important than that. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah Midifti, Abad Rapapa Obada Kevate De Rava. So Rabbi Yirmiyah Midifti says that Rapapa, a case came before him, and he followed the opinion of Rava, and said, only from now on they're disqualified. Ravashe Amar Hilchata Kevate De Abaye, Hilchata Kevate De Abaye, Bial Kegam. Ravashe says, however, even though Rapapa did that, one case like Rava, but the halacha follows Abaye, because halacha follows Abaye in six cases, and this is one of them. This is here, Edim, the ayin of is Edim Zomamin, that they are disqualified retroactively. So this is one of six cases where halacha follows Abaye. Tenan, and now this is why we brought this here, and not besides in Masechet Makot, why is it here? Because we want to ask from this Mishnah. Ganav al pi shenayim v'tabach u'machar al pihem v'nimse'u zomamin meshalemin et hakol. Our Mishnah said that if you have one set of witnesses and they testify about the thief, that the thief stole an ox, and they also testify that it slaughtered an ox or sold it, and turns out those witnesses are Edim Zoamin, those Edim Zoamin have to pay five times for an ox. So now, how did their testimony work exactly? Let's assume that they made two separate testimonies. First, they came in and said, oh, we saw him steal it. And then sometime later, maybe the next day, they said, oh, now we saw him that he slaughtered it. We saw the thief slaughter it. And then they were found to be Edim Zoamin about the theft, and then they were found to be Edim Zoamin also on the slaughter, right? Because it could be that the theft and the slaughter were at different times. And so the second set was, oh, let's say the theft was on Monday, and then the slaughter was on Tuesday. And so the Edim Mizimim come and say, they were with us in Chicago on Monday. And then they realize, oh, they're with us on Tuesday also. So let's say it happened all like this in stages. But this is a challenge to Abaye. If you think that the witnesses are disqualified retroactively, so since they became Edim Zomamin regarding the Geneva, right? And that happened first, right? They were Huzmo ala Geneva first. So now, once that happens, it turns out that they are false witnesses retroactively, right? So retroactively, we see that when they testified about the Tevicha, remember the testimony, we had first a testimony about Geneva, then testimony about Tevicha. That the second they are found Edim Zomin on Geneva, they are retroactively disqualified from the first testimony, which means automatically the second testimony will be thrown out. So why would they have to pay for the tibicha? And the Mishnah said in this case they have to pay five times. Well, why should they pay five times if they never actually retroactively, their testimony on the tibicha would not have been accepted anyway? Good question. So Amri hacha b'maiskenan kegon shuzmola tibicha techila. Oh, okay. We're talking about a case to change the order. First, they testified about geneva. Then, at a later time, they testified that the thief also slaughtered it. And then edim zomin came and said, no, they were with us on that day of slaughter. They couldn't have done that. At that point, they're going to be liable to three. And then turns out that they were edim zomin also on the geneva. So then they have to pay the other two. That's the case where they have to pay five. Okay, that seems to work, but we challenge that too. Amri, sof sof ki hadri mitazemi ageneva, igle milta dechi asadua tebicha pesulin havu, amai meshalemina tebicha. So this doesn't help, because at the end, when it turns out that they were edim zomemin regarding the geneva, so then we see retroactively they were disqualified witnesses since the first testimony that they gave about geneva. That means that their testimony about tevicha that happened afterwards was not a valid testimony to begin with. All right, it's not just that they became edim zomin. Becoming edim zomin, you still have to pay. But now we see that they would not have been qualified even to accept their testimony because they were rasha'im. Right? If it turns out you're a rasha, although the testimony is thrown out, they don't have to pay. So remember the order now. They testified about the theft on Monday. Then they testified about the shechita on Tuesday. They turned out to be edim zomin regarding the shechita on Wednesday. So now they would have to pay three. And then they found out to be edim zomin regarding the very first testimony about geneva, and that happened on Thursday. But if we follow Abaye, so retroactively we find out they were rasha'im since Monday. So anything that they did from after Monday is zero, right? It's just that's a testimony from a disqualified witness for which they should not have to pay. And therefore, once again, they should not have to pay the four and five. Even if they pay the two because they're deemed zomin for the geneva, they shouldn't have to pay the added three. Okay, final answer. We're talking about a case where they testified at the same time. They came in and they said, on Monday, we saw that this thief, he stole and slaughtered. And they said everything in one testimony. And then, on a later day, they were found to be edim zomemin. So there's no two steps to that. One would only they would already be disqualified from the first step. They were already disqualified all at once as edim zomemin. They were found to be edim zomemin on the entire one testimony because they gave a whole testimony together. And that's the case that we're talking about. They have to pay four and five. And this solves the challenge against Abaye. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.